Hello and welcome to another episode in the Naxos Sounds Interesting series, an engaging potpourri of musical topics. This episode is called Phrases of the Loon. An enduring challenge for composers goes beyond finding the inspiration for unforgettable melodies. Beautiful though these may be, they remain essentially abstract. Recreating sights, sounds, and emotions, however, requires that extra magical dimension to make the music click with the imagination and emotions of the listener, not just their ears. This podcast presents a brief examination of how composers succeeded in capturing the notion of madness, from the state of being love-crazed to being more seriously inclined to lunacy. Maybe you yourself can readily think of some basic techniques composers might use to express unpredictability and abnormality, such as dissonant harmony, extremes of pitch, and angular phrases shooting off at a tangent. This podcast episode digs into the crazy corner of the catalogue to find some examples. One of the first and most arresting that springs to mind is Peter Maxwell Davies' Eight Songs for a Mad King, which was first performed in 1969. There must be many people who will never forget the impact it made when it was first broadcast on television. Its bold, expressionistic gestures and violent mood swings sucking the audience into empathy with King George III of England, the monarch who experienced distressing bouts of madness. Features such as the tunes that were built into a miniature pipe organ owned by the king, dotty utterances attributed to him and recorded by Fanny Burney in her diaries, and the phenomenal vocal dexterity of Roy Hart, who gave the first performance. These all combined to construct the piece's unique sound world. Here's the opening song, titled The Sentry. The opening section of the lyrics by the Australian poet Randolph Stowe reads as follows. Good day to your honesty. God guard who guards the gate. Here is the key to the kingdom. You are a pretty fellow. Next month, I shall give you a cabbage. Thank you. The song The Crazy Woman by American composer William Bolcom forms part of his setting of a cycle of texts by American women titled I Will Breathe a Mountain, in this instance by Gwendolyn Brooks. The composer explains, when Marilyn Horne asked for a cycle of songs from American women poets, she had already picked Emily Dickinson's The Bustle in the House. I, in turn, asked my friend Alice Fulton to pick an anthology for me, including one of her own poems. I felt her choices would lend I Will Breathe a Mountain a special verbal topography. The resulting wide poetic range is reflected in the musical styles. The Crazy Woman is aptly captured by Bolcom in his errant vocal line, which is better heard than described.
I shall not see us made. Until November.
One of the most famous staged mad scenes occurs in Donizetti's opera Lucia di Lammermoor, a tragic tale of love, feuds, deception, madness, and murder. If Donizetti were to be remembered by just one work, it would be this one. For almost a century, it was on Lucia that his reputation principally rested. The choice of glass harmonica in conjunction with the flute to echo Lucia's fragile state of mind may seem strange, but the resultant sound world is certainly otherworldly. Forced into an unwelcome marriage, Lucia kills her bridegroom and succumbs to the insanity of imagining she is about to be wed to her true beloved, her thoughts soaring into coloratura cloud cuckoo land. That music was written in 1835. Some 45 years earlier, in 1791, Mozart had given us another neat example of how to use stratospheric vocals to suggest suspicious sanity. The character of the Queen of the Night in his opera The Magic Flute urges her daughter to take a dagger and kill her arch-enemy, Sarastro, during an aria of hellish coloratura revenge that usually brings the house down, even though Sarastro survives unscathed. Dating from 1893, Norwegian artist Edvard Munch's painting The Scream was given a musical representation in Robert Jager's Suite from Edvard Munch, which the American composer published in 1996. The score from which the suite was derived was originally written in 1967 for a documentary on Munch. The artist's depiction of a person covering their ears and wearing a highly distressed facial expression clearly represents an abnormal state of mind. Jager translated it into music in which the elements are likewise unhinged, unpredictable melodic contours, unstable rhythms, off-the-track harmonies, and volatile combinations of timbres.
Thank you.
The mental anguish of post-traumatic stress disorder, following participation in the horrors of war, for example, is often invisible. The bottling up of emotional trauma, stalking silently, frequently leads to later tragic consequences. Zhe Gonru lets the devil out of the deep in his string quartet number 5, which is subtitled Fall of Baghdad. The score records Zhe's musical thoughts that were prompted by the protracted Iraq War that raged from 2003 to 2011. The first movement, which lasts for a harrowing 7 minutes, is headed Abyss, Screaming, Living Hell, Barbaric March, Abyss, Threnody.
Thank you.
We'll end on a slightly different tack by mentioning composers who themselves suffered from a certain mental instability. Was Satie just being eccentric when insisting on a purely white diet, from coconut to chicken cooked in white water? Was Schoenberg all there with his triskaidekaphobia, or fear of the number 13? Robert Schumann was certainly deranged. Often beset by depression, he made attempts on his own life and died in an asylum for the insane. But let's end on a note of optimism by marvelling at what Schumann did achieve, despite his affliction, not least in the genre of song. Here's the opening of his song cycle, Dichterliebe, im wunderschönen Monat Mai, in the wonderful month of May. Thank you for tuning in to this Naxos Sounds Interesting podcast. For the text version, visit blog.naxos.com, where you'll also find an alternative audio series devoted exclusively to new releases from Naxos.